Welcome to Start to Finish Motherhood, a podcast for those thinking or already single mothers by choice, just looking for practical advice for navigating life's relationships. When you decide to have children on your own, it doesn't mean that you're completely alone. I'm Aisha Jenkins, and I'm partnering with you every step of your journey.
Hi, everybody. I am here today to talk about a topic that comes up quite often in the single mother by choice community. It comes up often enough for me to think that it's important. So I have three episodes in this series, and it's around building your single mother by choice village. We get a lot of questions, and they'll come in the form of, how do I go about building my village as a single mother by choice? How do I get started? And to some extent, it is a problem that is similar to what some people would have as a new parent if you're married or in a couple. And it's, how do I go about making mommy friends? Or how do I go about making friends as an adult? And so it's along those same lines. And some of the approaches that I have to making or building your SMC village is similar to making friends as an adult. And so kind of be kind, be consistent, don't be an asshole, right? And so those are some of my high level responses. But I think when it comes to building a village as a single mother by choice, it's a lot more nuanced than that. I think some people go into it thinking, oh, I'll just have my family and that's all I need. And part of what I want to do with this episode is to challenge you to think a bit deeper, be more intentional about building that village. So you can build a village from your existing family. And so that'll be the topic that we cover in today's episode. But in future episodes, I'll talk about how you can go about building your single mother by choice village from other sources, not just the family that you're born into. Okay, so I am going to talk about building your village using family members. And it's going to be a little bit controversial. This is not going to be a tell-all about my family by any degree, but I do want to talk honestly about the journey that I was on in terms of deciding what to do with the family that I was born into and if they would become part of my village. Now, I love my family. I have given as much as I have gotten. So I just want to be honest and upfront there. And so let's go ahead and get into it. When I was growing up and when I was married, I had people who loved and supported me, but maybe didn't love and support my husband or didn't love and support the marriage. My ex-husband had people who loved and supported him and loved the idea of us being married, but didn't necessarily support me as a person. And so I've had friends who have nurtured me, the relationship. So it's just different variations of support that I have received or I have gotten. All of this factors into how I view the world and how I view support systems for me as I entered into the parenting stage of my life and as I proceed moving forward in my parenting journey. And so when I had people who loved and supported me and not my husband or not my marriage, or loved and supported my husband, the marriage, but not me, it always felt inauthentic. It always felt that it was a conditional type of love. And so when I think about what I want a village to look like for me and my family, I had to really peel back the layers on those experiences for me. I had to peel back the layers on conversations that I had when I was at my most vulnerable point. So some people could be in your life to genuinely support you and support where you're going, ask you critical questions about your direction in life and your approaches and motivations for things. And those people are solid. They are supporting you. They are supporting your relationship. They're supporting your vision for your life. And then there are some people who are kind of in the middle. They could give or take you. And so those people, I kind of want to be in situations where people really, really want to gravitate and be a part of my world. And then you have people who say that they support you, but they're there to kind of be person on the front lines to see how you handle and overcome obstacles and adversity. They might be rooting for you verbally, but sometimes are like secretly waiting and hoping that something catastrophic will happen so that they could be there to kind of pick up the pieces, but to kind of say, I told you so. And those are people you don't really, really need. And so when I thought about having children and what I needed in terms of a village, I really wanted the people who were going to be diehard, supportive, and also honest with me. And those were the people that I thought should have the opportunity to be around my children and influence my children, because I think that that is a gift that I give someone, that is a gift that they give me to want to be a part of influencing my children into adulthood. And so I would say at the root or the foundation of how I started being intentional about the village was to start looking at the people who supported me. And that would help to inform, if they love me, will they also love extensions of me? Will they also love my children? Will they speak love into my children, whether or not they go in the direction of the village members choosing, right? I would want people who are going to influence my kid to be who they, my child, is, and not who the village member wants them to be, because that's the way that I'm raising them. Okay, let's go ahead and get into the episode. To answer the question, how do I go about building a village that supports me as the parent and my child or my children as a single mother by choice? And if I wanted to start with my family, like most people will come thinking, yeah, I'll lean on my family. I will do all of this, raising my children with the help of my family, the support of my family. I have a large family. They'll do this. And I would say that this may or may not work for you. Many people come to the single mother by choice journey thinking that they will just leverage their existing family, their mother, their father, the grandparents of the children, and that they would just happily jump in and support them in their journey so that they could still have a little bit of a social life and a nice balance at home. And what they have come to find is that that's not always a guarantee. That's a conversation that needs to be had. It is not always the way that you envision it to be. These are grown people who themselves have opinions and who raised you a certain way, and they're going to help raise grandchildren in similar vein unless you have these conversations. So let's talk about an approach. This is an approach that I took. This is an approach that I would recommend other people take if they're at the point where they are thinking about who's going to be a part of my village and I can just use family. And so I push back on that a little bit. I would say, honestly, assess what you need at this season in your parenting journey. Okay, so if you are just about to adopt, or if you are just about to deliver, and you are thinking, who do I want to have there in the birthing room? Who's going to support me? Who's going to listen to me? Who's going to advocate for me? Who's going to walk out of the room with the wristband on, saying that they are attached to the child who was just born, or they're attached to the child who is being adopted, that they'll stand up and be, in a case of emergency, person? Who's that person going to be? So different points in your parenting journey, you might need different levels of support. So I would think through, honestly, and do this in private. Other people don't have to be around. I have a list. Think through who you are as this person. Most of us will go through the journey to become a single mom or a single parent by choice, and it could change you depending on your journey, how long it was, the different paths that you had to take, the different things that you've had to come to terms with. So the journey to becoming a single mother by choice could change you. And so who are you now that you're sitting down and you're getting ready to be intentional about building the village that will surround you and your family? How much physical and emotional space do you require? I think I've said numerous times that I am an extroverted introvert. And as the older I get, the more introvert I lean. So in terms of how much downtime I need, how much physical space I need, how much emotional space I need, that is actually something that is tangible and I need to factor into what I can realistically endure for the people who would be part of my village, who I have to call on often. What past traumas am I working through or have I healed from, right? Because trauma is going to impact how you raise your children, how you interact with your chosen village members. And so what trauma are you currently working through? So if I am trying to recover from a trauma where I had been silenced most of my life, and then I became an adult and I found my voice, and now that I'm about to become a parent, I'm going to invite people into my village, I don't want to be silenced again. And so that is something that I'm keenly aware of. And so if I'm still working through it, that means that I might easily be triggered by someone over-talking me, someone going above my head and making decisions for my child when I'm asleep. What traumas am I currently healed from? Being healed from the trauma means that, yes, you've dealt with it, you've processed it, but you still have to be aware of what situations you enter into and what relationships you enter into, because while you might not be easily triggered, you could be deeply triggered, where stressful situations might cause this triggered reaction where you just snap on somebody. And so you want to avoid that. You want to be aware of it. What brings out the best in you? What situations or people bring out the worst in you? What characteristics rub you the wrong way? It's just an annoyance, right, on one day. But if you have somebody in your space, they're coming to help with the kid for the first 2 months of life, you're seeing them constantly. The little things that they do on a regular basis could really, really, really irritate you to the point where you need to have a conversation and it's something you can't deal with, or it might impact the relationship. So be aware of those things, and maybe you can have a conversation ahead of time about how to head that off and when someone might need to step away or when you might need to step away. What are your stop words or your words for, like, we need to pause this? Okay, so what type of home do you want to raise your family in, right? Because that, if you're being intentional, let's strip it all down. I knew going into parenting that I wanted a stable, peaceful home for myself and my children. And I safeguard that and I keep that as something that I focus on quite often. So that means that not everybody gets to come in my house. Not everybody gets an invitation. Not everybody gets to babysit my kids. I might see you out in public at the playground. We might go on vacations together, but are you somebody that I would have in my home or in my hotel room? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But these are honest conversations that I'm having with myself, and I don't owe myself any judgment. I just need to know my whys. Okay. Then after you've honestly assessed yourself, honestly assess the people who you are thinking are going to be part of your village, like family and friends. So I'm saying family, but the same thing can go for friends, right? So some people will say, I'm about to adopt. I'm going to move closer to family so that they can help me with the child. Or I am going to deliver in 2 months. I want to move closer to family so that they can help me with my child and provide support. I would caution someone about doing that. And I would say, ask yourself these questions. Honestly assess the people in your family. Are there documented real examples, the support that they've provided to you over the years? And if they are older than you, the support they provided to you when you were a child, how have they grown? Have they changed? Some people are sweet as pie, but then they become bitter with age. Some people were bitter, then they realized the impact of their ways and they changed. So how have they changed over the years? What are their values? Does someone value telling a white lie? Do they steal occasionally? Do they drive with their seatbelt on or off? Right? What are some things that are important to them? Do they watch reality television? I'm not judging, but do their morals align with yours? And so you could be a religious person, are they a non-religious person and they don't observe religious holidays and things like that? Do they lie, cheat, steal? Do they touch children? So ask your questions. Do their morals align with yours? Do they listen to you? When you say stop, do they stop? When you say go, do they go? When you ask questions, do they answer your questions? When you say, hey, well, why did you do that? Or that made me feel some kind of way. What's their reaction? Do they support your dreams and your visions? What cruel things have they said to you in the past? What loving things have they said to you in the past? Can they view your family history with a critical eye? So some people, you might have KKK members, and can they look back on that family and be like, yeah, there were some things that were questionable and I have to repent for them, right? So are they looking at your family history with a critical eye, being honest about the things that could have been different, probably should have been different in your family? This is going to either help them validate your approach to parenting, your approach to body rules and things of that nature, or invalidate them with your kid. How have they protected you in the past? Or how have they protected other smaller children, cats and pets in your family, right? What can you rely on them for? And I think that these are very telling questions, and your responses to these questions are going to be telling as well. Some people have been conditioned to override their sense of caution, their intuition about certain people. And I would just say, this is not the time to do that. Put everything out on the table. So this is an exercise, and this exercise takes time. I did some of it. I started some of it prior to becoming a parent. And then once I became a parent, and when I really had to sit down and think about guardianship, the mainstays of my village, I really had to look critically, because I don't want to find myself in a situation that's a critical situation and the people I thought that I could rely on totally fail me. And then that impacts my kids in a negative way. So God forbid I'm in a car accident, and then the people that I thought that I could call on that are local don't pick up their phone, and my kids end up having to stay the night with a social worker or in a foster home. And I don't want that to happen. And so I really need to know that the people that I am adding to my village are people that I can rely on. Also, assess your friends. There are going to be times, and everybody reacts to the news of you becoming a single mother by choice differently. And 9 times out of 10, the reaction has more to do with them than it has to do with you. And so as you're talking to people about your journey, listen to the people who poo-poo your decision and who poop on it, and the people who celebrate you and your decision. And even the people who celebrate you, there's no guarantee that they're going to be there once the child arrives anyway. So do be keen and clued into these reactions. Okay, so now, that was pretty much the starting point of me mapping out what my village would look like. So I didn't take for granted that just because they were family and friends that I grew up with, that they would automatically be a part of my village. I actually had to vet them. And some of the people, fortunately, I was able to vet early on in the process. I mean, let's just say that just because we're family doesn't mean that you automatically get an invitation to influence or be around my child. I understand that there's benefits to me as well in terms of being able to support me so that I can have some rest and I can have some time away from the kids. But for me, it's so far more important to me that my kids feel safe and secure where they are and around the people that I choose for them to be around with. And so not all influences are good influences on your kids, your family, and your day-to-day life. And so there are some people who have unprocessed baggage and unprocessed histories and trauma that can inadvertently spill over into their interactions with you or their interactions with your child. And so you just want to be as aware as possible. Do your due diligence. You can't anticipate everything, but do take the time to really like think through. Okay. So for me, so I do have a story about how this impacted me and why I emphatically say know your people, because there was a time where I was insecure. I was moving to this area new. I was pregnant And I was just like, yeah, I'll do a win-win for my family. I have somebody come and help me out and I will help them out. And then it'll be a win-win and everything will be great. I'll be able to go out 1 week in a month and I'll do all of this. Now, to the grace of my siblings that I did invite to do this, we did it. It did not work out. It was a disaster, but it was one of those situations where I just assumed, knowing where they were from what I knew, that they would be able to do this and support me this way. They tried. They couldn't. It was a disaster. Love them dearly. So we did that for 1 year. And then I realized that in order to maintain my own sanity, I really needed to shut out the noise and I needed to just buckle down and raise my kids the best that I could and to be prepared to pay for any type of support that I was going to get until I was able to build a village. So I was one of those people who initially leaned in large part on my family that I was born into. And I found myself with probably a 6-month-old and realizing that I had made a miscalculation. I'd made a mistake. This is not the situation for me. It added more stress than it relieved and that I would need to do it on my own. And so about when my daughter turned 1 year old, I moved into my own apartment by myself and I set out to build my village that would support me and my family. And so I keep saying support me and my family because I do believe, even though I chose to conceive as a solo parent, I do believe that it takes a village to raise a child. So that means that I need a village that supports me as a parent. When I have those moments when I'm insecure and I'm unsure and I need to bounce ideas off of, well, I just need a break. Sometimes it's a phone call. Sometimes it's a happy hour. Sometimes it's a second hand on vacation. I also need a village that supports my kids when I'm not around, when my back is turned, or when my kids just need a second opinion. And then I need a village that supports our family unit, that wants to go to holidays, invite us to holidays, invite us to birthday parties, because I won't always ask. Like Thanksgivings, I'm like, it's a small family of three. I'll take them to the movies and just veg, but somebody invites me over to dinner that I don't have to cook and I just need to show up. Okay, yeah, I'm down for it. So I'll do it. So I need village members that support me on all three levels, me, my kids, my family. Okay, that was my experience thinking that I would lean mostly on my family to be parts of my village. But when my daughter was one, I needed another plan. And so this is when I started sharing more with other people. And so I will say that I know after having gone through that experience a little bit more about myself, and hopefully it's a situation where you could learn from my mistakes and do some of this work upfront before you uproot your family and make a costly move across country and end up in a situation that's worse than if you had stayed alone in your city and struggled to make it all work on your own. There are some other options for village building that we'll get into in other episodes, but I really wanted to focus this episode on building a village from family members. Now, I said a lot, but that's not to say that there are not family members who will pass your standards and make it into part of your village. I'm just saying that let's not guarantee that wholesale, I got a family that exists, they're going to be my village, because that's not the case. You might not want that, and they might not expect that to be what they're doing into the future. So let me go back to my list. After having these really honest conversations with myself about who I am, the people in my family are, and my friends are, I also took a step back to think about the type of home environment I wanted for my kids. And so there are a few things that were important to me. One was that there was no drama, right? Whoever was going to be in my life and in my village was going to bring a minimal amount of drama. We're human. Human beings come with some drama, but you can't be all drama. Lots of expressing and sharing love, right? So I knew that I wanted a loving household. We talk to each other in a loving way. We express love. We give hugs. We give kisses. We snuggle. We are a loving family. Lots of communication. Communication is so big. I talk a lot. therefore my children talk a lot, but I think that it's important sometimes when you're processing what you're feeling, what you're going through, I wanted to create an environment where communication was a big part of that environment. The kids felt comfortable talking to me, and I also share honestly, I'm human, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, I had a hard day, mommy needs a hug, and things like that. Hey, you're struggling today, let's sit down, let's talk about it, what are you thinking? I really wanted our household to be a household where we communicate, we talk to each other. Kindness is important to me. I think that even with the little people who grow up in your household, once they enter school, once they're in daycare, you won't know what they're dealing with 100% of the time. And so I want to treat the world with kindness. And I also want to treat my kids and myself with kindness. You've had a rough day. Let's just sit down and let's just be together. Let's watch a movie. Can I get you that? Please and thank you. Those are important to me. And then consistency. Growing up, there was a lot of moving around. And this was something that I saw with my siblings as well as they were raising their kids. They were young, in their 20s, and they were raising their kids. So they were moving around. The kids were moving around. And we could say that kids are resilient. But for me, and I know even as I was moving around, I craved stability. I craved roots. I craved just being someplace, getting to know the people and taking my time and moving at my own pace. And so that was one of the things that I wanted to create in the environment for myself and my kids. And so I stayed in the same location when I moved here. I assessed, we moved around from a block here, a block there over the first 7 years of my daughter's life until we're still kind of in the same area. And so for me, consistency of who's coming, who's going, consistency of where we live, the playgrounds that we go to, my kids love to have their things. They like to know that their stuffies are theirs, their shoes are theirs, their mom is theirs. And so for me, those things were really important. No drama. Lots of expressing and sharing love, communication, kindness, and consistency. And so when I think back through of that list of five things, one of those things is not the easiest thing for me. And one is the showing of affection and the touching. And so I would say I'm a moderately affectionate person, but even to this day, when I'm around other people's kids and stuff, I don't even really like to touch their kids. Now, babies, nobody can, you always want to snuggle and hold a baby, but little kids, I will hold your hand. I will keep you safe when we cross the street. So I've got two kids, and there are times where two kids are too much. And it's not just the kids, it's four arms and four legs, 4 feet with sharp nails that are just too much. And I get overwhelmed with the touching. And so it takes everything in my power to kind of say, my body and my mind is screaming out, don't touch me. But I try not to yell it. I do say it occasionally, like, stop touching me, out, like out of the room. But of course, gently and lovingly, this communication and kindness. But really, I'm just like, okay, don't touch me. But this, I had to grow and I had to learn, because when I had my children, at a time where skin to skin contact was a thing at the hospital. And so I get it. There's a lot of science behind it. I did it because I love my kids. And when they're babies, it is so very easy to do skin to skin. As they become bigger, it's just a lot of baby and a lot of, so it was really something that I had to learn to do. And now I think I'm better with it, but I still barely touch people's pets, animals, and kids. Like I said, I will hold hands, and there's nothing more snuggly and cuddly than a baby, but that's the extent of it. And so I say all that to be like, I'm still a work in progress, but I'm hoping that you can learn from my experience and really take the time to assess your friends and family. And just because they're friends and family doesn't mean that they're always safe, doesn't mean that they're always considerate of you and will listen to you. And that's who you need in your village. So assess them, don't take them wholesale, do pick and choose. And yeah, there you have it. So last thing is that I talked about journaling. I talked about having these honest conversations. I am a big proponent of therapy. And one of the requirements, if you go through a fertility clinic to, or if you're working with adoption, they will probably require you to sit down with a social worker or a therapist or a psychologist. I do recommend that you do that. I did it and I talked through some of these things initially. Like I knew which family members I would want to avoid and which family members I thought was okay at the time to be around my kids or me when I was in a very vulnerable state. So I do recommend you do that. I do have a journal that's available on Start to Finish Motherhood under the products page. But if you sign up for my mailing list or if you send me an email, I can send you some journal pages to just kind of sit down and go through the process of thinking about and being intentional about which family members get to be a part of your village. And there you have it. Thanks for listening to Start to Finish Motherhood with Aisha. If you want to keep the conversation going, follow Start to Finish Motherhood on Instagram or email me at aisha@starttofinishmotherhood.com. If you love this episode, please share it with anyone who's thinking of becoming a single mother by choice, anyone who's already parenting as a single mother by choice and just looking for advice on navigating it all, or a friend or family member who's looking to support someone else's single mother by choice journey. Until next time, bye now.